Hello and welcome to the Unsightly American Soccer Podcast for, well, the official off-season. The Gold Cup has indeed ended, and we talked about that in the first half of the pod posted last week here at halphillips.net. This week we wrap the European season, first with Spencer Robinson, soccer pundit with ESPN Asia. We spoke to him from Singapore about the seemingly imminent departure of Cesc Fabregas from Arsenal, the club Spencer supports from a distance. We then lock in on what might have been the most eventful season in Spanish football history with Stephen Myers. As our discussions normally go with Esteban, this one proved wide-ranging. The Prem versus La Liga, Barca versus Real, Spanish Elan versus thuggery from all comers. I'm your host, Hal Phillips. The conversation starts right now.
Fabregas, no one at Arsenal and fans should begrudge him. Obviously, we'd love to get another season out of him, but you can't keep someone against their will, and someone who's given as much as he has. So we'll see how it develops.
My question would be if Fabregas does go to Barcelona, and you're right, it's really been a question of when more than if, but if and when he goes, does he get a game?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Xavi's 31 now. And he can't play every single game. And the pace that Barcelona play, no, I think the timing's perfect. You see, this is the other thing with Fabregas and Barcelona are being quite clever. They're saying, look, he's had a lot of injuries the last 2 years, which he has. He's actually, I think last season he only played 22 games or started 22 games.
Xavi or Cesc?
Fabregas.
Yeah.
In the season before, about 25. So, no, I mean, I think, you know, that he'd be perfect for them. Perfect age, obviously the language. His best mates are Piqué and Puyol, I think, so, and his family. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised now if it did happen. I'm sorry to say.
So did the Martignol hire strike fear into the hearts of, Arsenal and Tottenham fans?
Not Arsenal fans. I would think they would for Tottenham. I mean, I felt he was very harshly dealt with at Tottenham. I thought he did a great job there.
He did. And I think that if you're looking at the caliber of coach that Fulham would be expected to attract, they couldn't have done any better than him.
No. I think, they did well to get Hughes. And I think Joel would do a very good job there.
Where did Hughes go?
He hasn't got. This is the again. It's very fascinating. Oh, very Machiavellian. The word was that he had been promised that he'd get the Villa job if he resigned.
Right.
So he resigned, and then Mohamed Al Fayed, the owner of Fulham, is apparently big buddies with Doug Ellis, the ex-chairman of Villa, who still wields a lot of power. And he said, look, don't touch this guy with a barge pole. And so all Hughes' plans to go to Aston Villa fell flat. So he's looking around at the moment.
I love it. Everyone gets what they deserve. No good deed goes unpunished.
Well, no, but it's like these guys like Allardyce. There are always clubs, Hal, who are going to take them because these guys, although they're not very pleasant individuals, they get the job done and they've got good track records. You know, maybe not attractive football and maybe not expensive, but, they'll keep a team in a division or they'll get a lower division team promotion. So they'll always be in demand. No question.
So that's a good cursory sweep of the European scene. Did the U.S.-Mexico game register in any way in Hong Kong?
No, I think I'm in Singapore at the moment, but no, I think it got a few paragraphs, but I have to say for the first time in many years, I was, so disgruntled with what happened to Arsenal capitulating the last couple of months that I was actually quite glad for a break from football, which I've never felt before. I think So no, I didn't even watch this England under 21 matches. I haven't watched the game since the last day of the English season. Nothing.
Well, as always, Spencer, a wealth of information and great fun.
Cheers, Al.
Talk to you soon. The ascendance, the pure and unadulterated, undisputed ascendance of Spanish soccer.
Huh. Well, Hal, that fascinates me, what you just said, because I know you're quite a fan of the Premier League, of the English First Division, that you have been for a long time. And, you know, again, it'd be nice to have Tom in the conversation, because I know he's a Fulham fan and he's an English footy fan. You and I were together once in England playing soccer, as a matter of fact. And it'd be a good conversation to have about comparing the leagues.
I don't think there's any comparison now. The only reason the English league is good is because it was, for a time, the most free-spending league. So they attracted talent from all over the world. It's not because English players are any good. The Spanish league has always maintained that they're just as good.
We've got to pause there. And yeah. I'm sorry to be interruptive, but you know, so many people would take that up that I'm going to take it up on their behalf. There's a type of play that has had huge and fantastic appeal to footy fans. The way that the game is played there in the First Division in England, and not just the First Division.
I think that's only partially true. I mean, the only reason we're even having this conversation is that English teams have traditionally done well in European competitions. The national team from England, the people who, you know, on whom we would sort of rest any sort of reputation for English football, they can't do shit. And the Spanish always resisted that idea that the English First Division, the English football was the best league in the world.
I haven't said it was the best in the world.
What were we talking about?
It has its partisans who are so passionate. It's the footy that they love most and they love to watch. And I can think back to reading articles about fans of English football from 20 years ago, and how they passionately embrace First Division football in England in a way much different than they would say the Italian or Spain or Germany, right? The quality of football, by quality I mean the way it's played. You know, the aggressive, fast-paced, furious play that we can contrast to other leagues, and it has its. It's had its ardent followers. I mean, shit, man. I think I remember Lennox Lewis talking about how he, you know, or many others, you know, examples like that of world-class athletes who are soccer fans, but who are particularly English soccer fans. Now, I ain't one of those, but again, I'm just struck by the first thing you say there, the unquestioned ascendancy of Spanish football to the heights of European.
Well, let's review. They are the world champions. They are the European champions, and the two best club teams in the world this year were both from La Liga.
Yeah, you could say that Real Madrid was the second. It could be said that and suggested that they were the second best club team. Real Madrid.
And the only reason that I think that you're right that English football has a reputation for work rate and speed. And a lack of time provided on the ball, which is a result of the speed, that other leagues can't necessarily claim or match. But ultimately, it's about quality. And the quality that does exist in England is based entirely on foreign quality, or in large part on it. And even the best teams turned out by that system, that formula, in the shape of a team like Manchester United, was shown to be severely lacking when they played a team like Barcelona. Now, would they have played Madrid, and would it have been a better match? Yes. You could argue that Man United might have won that match because, you know, Madrid's a bit of a wild card whenever they play. But they own the soccer world right now. Spain does, and you know, I don't know if there's any way to. How can you not go along with that.
I'm willing to go along with it. Again, I'm just getting back to that provocative first statement you made. Because there's an English style of play that still has enormous appeal. Quickly then, getting to the final in which Barca won 3-1. But Hal, don't you reckon it, man? You were shit on the day. And what's more, that their coaching staff, to use an American term for it, flopped. We didn't see any adjustments coming out of halftime.
What adjustments can be made against a team that's better than you? That's more fit. That's faster and more skilled.
Bro, I'm not the knighted world famous football coach with, I imagine, a crack staff. I'm pretty good at what I do, I'd say, but I ain't a soccer manager. What adjustments? And I'm a little surprised by your response. What adjustments would you have made?
Yeah.
Didn't they watch the Copa del Rey final?
Well, I think when
Madrid beat Barcelona. Hey, mate! At the end of December, in a Copa del Rey match, an important match against the Basques, the famous team of the Basque country, Athletic Bilbao, Barca was fully loaded. They had to win. They were trying to win, and they couldn't score against Bilbao. Athletic, I really should call it. 0-0. Barca could be foiled. And we saw none of that. No adjustments made by Manchester United. Hey, I loved the day. I was with friends. I was at the center of things because I got this big history of Barcelona. Shoots, it was great. Don't get me wrong. After the third goal came, you know, I wanted them to pile on. Not pile on. I like how they respectfully held back. But since Barca had scored 5 goals in so many games this year, I think, you know, una manita, a little hand,
yeah,
5 fingers, 5 goals would have been great. Let's have it.
So I think that Ferguson had a limited amount of moves to make because, A, this is not the finest Manchester United team, you know, that he's put together. You know, this is a team that has to pull a 38-year-old Paul Scholes off the bench. This is a team that started a 37-year-old Ryan Giggs in midfield. This is a team that relies on serious minutes from Darren Fletcher in the midfield. It's just not a very good team. So they have limited sort of options when it comes to changing the way they want to play a game.
Pluto, that doesn't wash. Well, it doesn't wash a very good team.
They're not
the league champions.
But
they arrived to the finals and they did it fairly.
Sure.
And they got 2 players of quality at every position. They could, all I'm saying is, they could have done better. They weren't good on the day.
I don't think they're very good, period. They beat Chelsea. They beat another English team that they own in the quarterfinals. They beat a team from Schalke that was horrible in the semifinals. They didn't play any good teams on the way in, and they avoided the second best team in the tournament.
All right. Well, that beggars a slight, an expanded sort of conversation on our part about this season's European Cup and how it played out. I was expecting more from Manchester United, and I was certainly expecting more after the first 10 minutes in which they were excellent.
Yep.
And dangerous repeatedly, and looked to be a real deal opponent for Barca and a threat to win the game in the first 10 minutes. But then came half an hour in which it was men versus boys, as goes an expression. Where were the adjustments coming out of halftime?
I don't know. Where are the adjustments from Mourinho, who played the team 5 times and has at his disposal, we can agree, probably the second best team in Europe? There are no adjustments to be made when one team is better than everybody else. When one team does everything better than you. No one can play against Barcelona. You could say, let me finish. You could say that, oh yeah, that one time they had to play against the Basques in a Copa del Rey game in December, and they had trouble scoring. They did win the game in advance, right? But that was...
They won the tie.
Yeah, they won the tie. But the point is that they're the best team in Europe. And they've shown it time and time again, not just, you know, by eking out victories through grit and determination, by flattening people, by embarrassing them. And Manchester United was no different. They got embarrassed.
You're right. it was a domination. And goes back to Cruyff and the central tenet of his football philosophy, and that is to possess the ball. If you possess the ball, your opponent doesn't have it. Good things are going to happen to you, and unwelcome things are not going to be happening to you, likely. And, of course, when you started with your list, Spain just won the under-21 European Championships the other day.
It's an incredible moment, and then right after it happened, they show up in Foxborough, Massachusetts, and just embarrassed the United States, you know, national team, that which is a team that had beaten Spain 2 years ago in an important match, a team that, you know, can play with good teams now. That it's not often that they get embarrassed in that way, that they were embarrassed. They couldn't even get the ball.
A mismatch.
It was men and boys, and there were three or four guys on that team that I think anyone who doesn't watch a lot of the Liga would not even have recognized, and they were outstanding. One of them scored two goals, never heard of the guy, and he looked masterful. That they're just deep.
With regard to Ferguson's comments that this isn't going to change until this class of players matures, that is, gets old in the tooth, is that if I had been a Manchester United fan and saw that the same team came out there in the second half after having just been spanked, had gotten, but having had the lucky break to get back into the game, it was offsides on the pass. That Manchester United goal was illegitimate.
Yes.
You know, we can talk about that. But if I had been a Manchester United fan and saw that that my manager hadn't made any changes after we'd just been taking a beating on the ropes, but yet we have a chance to compete, I would have been pissed off. I would have been screaming at Telly, what the fuck is he doing? We're getting our asses kicked. We have got to have some changes. We've got a bench full of players. Things have to be different. Show me something. Okay, end of story on that.
Yeah.
The team is just incredible. The football they're playing. And that the club influenced the Spanish national team, not just with the players themselves who play on both teams, but with the style of play.
Who has the greatest job in the world right now? It's Del Bosque, you know, who does just basically rolls the balls out, doesn't he? I mean, is anyone under the impression that he has any kind of control or input on that group?
Oh, yeah. Listen, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of writing about the difficulties that he particularly has. There's a lot of talk and debate and writing about this because in the long and anguished and violent history between the two arch rivals, between the team of the, between Franco's team. And in fact, I've even had remarkably in my travels, my hitchhiking around Spain, I've gotten rides from, you know, all kinds of people. And I'll never forget a Galician talking to me with real bitterness, remembering the stories of his parents who, you know, there was hunger in Galicia. I mean, people died of starvation in the 30s and the 40s, you know, because of the cruelties imposed from the Madrid-based government of the fascist Franco. So this incredible relationship of these two sporting entities, Real Madrid and Football Club Barcelona, whose motto, as has become very much in currency, going back to the late 30s, Més que un club, that's Catalan, more than a club, something more than just a soccer team out on a pitch, a living, breathing symbol of the nation of Catalunya and what it is to be Catalan, all things Catalan, in direct opposition with Real Madrid. And in this decades-long Hatfield and McCoy, you know, enmity that is a book with chapter after chapter, owing in large part to Mourinho, things have never been worse. That when that stuff went down those few months ago, that this enormous book of bitterness and vitriol had reached its most heated chapter ever. And Del Bosque is the guy who has to keep the Spanish national team riding on top of the world with this extraordinary collection of talent.
That's just it. I mean, a lot has been written about the job he has, and a lot has been theorized that there is great dissension in the team, and they're just not talking about it. But as far as the product that you see on the field, it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
And I think that it's all great narrative, and if I was a Spanish journalist, I'd write about it too. But, Del Bosque has, this theoretically difficult job, but in reality, he's got 35 players of extreme quality to choose from. When push comes to shove, they do play together. Saniker is one of the reasons why. And when push comes to shove, they'll probably win the Euros again because they had the best team.
Yeah, you must have noticed that he definitely stepped out on damage control.
Totally.
I mean, that's his role as captain, and he is especially suited to do that. But he was called to do it. He needed to do it. I can check in with my people about this issue. But I think it is a real situation. I don't think it's just exaggerated in the press because it's good copy. Apparently, the Madrid players who get selected for La Selección, that there was bad blood that resulted from those four games.
I'm sure there is some. Ultimately, the proof is in the pudding, not just in the fact that they win, and they win in dominant fashion, but
in an exhibition game against an ordinary international opponent, the United States.
Check out their results for the last year. While all of this volume, this great volume of vitriol and menace is supposed to be brewing, they've killed everybody they've played, and not just in a normal fashion. I would say that Barcelona has ascended here too. They're playing Barcelona's game. They're playing that style of game. And they won the World Cup playing Barcelona's style of game. So they're really
Johan Cruyff.
There's really no question, as to why Spain is good now. It's not merely because they have, an incredible generation of players coming through. They have an incredible generation of players playing a style of football that, well, number one, only they can play, and that is a superior tactically and, aesthetically to anything else going right now. If you are Ramos, are you gonna step in and play that game along with them and look good doing it? Of course you are. And might you feel sort of put down to a certain extent that you're playing on a secondary club? Well, welcome to the world of Osasuna. Anyone who makes the national team from any small club is going to feel that way, that they're playing a game that's being dictated by the big clubs, the successful clubs, and that's just the way it is. I'm sure there are tensions, but I think they're all tensions that everyone's willing to subsume because they're dominant. And who doesn't want to be dominant?
Not quite that easy. Again, this is a fascinating country, a country of nations, and identities are profound and entirely personal.
What's interesting is that in a way, Spanish football is far less interesting than they were when they were fucking up, because they fucked up in spectacular fashion for all the cultural reasons that you cite. Now that they're winning, it's almost a diminishment of these cultural sort of issues, because surely they can't be insurmountable. Oh, look, they aren't insurmountable. They're the best team in the world. I just hope to God they get a chance to play Brazil in a game that matters sometime soon, because before...
Hal, I was just going to reference Brazil, because as we both know, last year in the summertime and leading up to it, the coach for Brazil, who had been the captain of the team and a world champion, Dunga, elected mal. He chose badly in the type of football he wanted to play. Mm-hmm. In the long run, he put a team of bruisers out there. He stepped away from, of course, the famous tradition of Brazilian soccer. Mm-hmm. The beautiful game. It's not like he didn't have a chance to employ that. Talk about a talent pool. He chose along the lines of the bottom line result of what he thought was necessary, and it's what Mourinho has done at the club level, and it's what the Dutch did to get to the final. You and I have spoken at length about that.
Let's get inside of Dunga's head. We have to play this way so that we can do what?
Win the trophy.
Beat whom?
Everybody else.
Beat Spain.
If we are to meet them in the semifinals. I mean, we did speak at length. They had to beat Holland, which almost beat Spain, as you and I both know.
Yeah.
Almost. almost won with their ill and unfortunate strategy. And had it not been for, well, just a goalpost, Brazil would have been there in the final.
Mm-hmm. Would he have been lauded or derided for putting together the type of team that he did if they had managed to bully their way to a world championship?
Into the final.
Exactly. And look at the teams that have given...
He would have been both, Hal. Would have been both lauded and derided.
But I think that if you are actually trying to put together a team to beat the best, which is right now Spain and Barca, these are the tactics. Real Madrid showed it in the Copa del Rey.
And they needed the assistance, the allegiance, if you will, at one extreme, of the referee in order to have that result.
And I think that in a final, you're going to get that because they don't want to decide the match. You're not going to get a hard line in a final. You're going to get that hard line in a regular season match where the referee's going to say that's out of order.
And let me just note that they needed not just the manner of play, but also the theatrical accoutrement to that manner of play. That is the rehearsed and the orchestrated theatrics of the whole team during the game.
Mm-hmm. Which is
as a response to the responses of their opponent to their style of play.
Yep.
No, that was a very impressive bit of theatrical orchestration.
Which is why it was so disingenuous of Real to take objection to Barcelona's subsequent theatrics in their next match, right? Because they were just fighting fire with fire.
Hal, we have an even larger context, and it's even larger than the Hatfields and McCoys or the Capulets and the Montagues. This is Barça Madrid. Madrid, Barca.
Mm-hmm.
And Mourinho has been handed the keys to not just the palace, to the nerve center. The most important thing, bar none, is that Real Madrid reascend the throne, king of the hill, that they topple Barcelona. It means everything to El Madridismo, to that movement, to that whole populace who support Real Madrid, mm-hmm. and for whom that support is an essential part of their identity, be they Castilians or Madrileños. You know, like, who would the Capulets be without the Montagues? You know, I mean, I'm not going to fall back to the Tao, but we could do it, you know? It's because, as Lao Tzu, the legend we know as Lao Tzu, it's... The window doesn't have meaning were it not for the wall.
Well, and that philosophical note, Stephen.
Well, thank you, bro. I didn't want to disappoint you.
I must take my leave because I have got ferrying duties beginning in 5 minutes.
Ah, I've lost my audience. You know what, Pluto?
What?
It's going to start up big time in August, and you know why, right? Because the first title of the new season is what's called the Supercopa de España, played between the winner of the cup, the King's Cup, and the winner of the league. And Hal, it gets even better, because it's not just one game. They play home and home. Hey, brah, in August, it's on. But it never turns off.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
All right, great catching up.
All right, brother. Peace out.